Deuteronomy chapter 1. This is now Moses in his final maturity. Whether he said all these words the very day he died, that's debatable, but he certainly would have said them in the last month before he died. So you see here a man in his spiritual maturity, and he reels off the law to them, but it is Deuteronomus, the second law, because there are some changes in what he says as he repeats the law to them. And I think you see here a man in his maturity, a man in his real spiritual maturity. And this is the force of him keeping on saying, this day, I tell you this day, today. Now, if this was really his swan song on the last day of his life, well, we can imagine the passion in his voice as he's pleading with them, this day, today, get it. You know, he had the urgency of a dying man. Well, one of the things that he gets to in his spiritual maturity is a recognition of his own failings and the failings of Israel. And a lament, I suppose, maybe obliquely, as to what could have been and the opportunities missed. You see it in verse 2. It's 11 days' journey from Horeb by the way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. He's saying you can walk the way that we went in 11 days from Egypt or the Red Sea to the entrance to the land. But it took them 38 years chasing the tails round and round. If only they had had faith. If only they had put their best foot forward and trusted in God and not in their own strength and not been so fearful, well, they could have done it in 11 days. And that was God's intention. I think that's quite clear that that was his intention, but that purpose was amended and extended because of this 38 years wandering. When you look at your life from your baptism up to the point when you enter God's kingdom, when Jesus returns, you know, we really could have got there much quicker, but there was a lot of chasing our tails. The point is, have a sense of direction. Have a sense that, yep, there is only ultimately one way, and I will go that one way, and I'm not going to mess around chasing my tails. Let's go for it. There is only one thing that ultimately matters, and that is the ways of God and his Son and his kingdom. As you go through Deuteronomy, you see that consciously, unconsciously, directly and obliquely, he mentions his own failures. You see it all the way through. Let's take a couple of examples. Verse 22, he reflects how when they first approached the land, you came near to me and said, let us send men before us that they may search the land for us and bring us word again. Well, they went up, we're told, to see whether it was a good land and what the people were like who lived there. They had been told, this is a good land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and you are well able to overcome it. I'm giving it to you. But they wanted spies to go in there and have a look round and come back and tell them, when God had already told them. If they hadn't have sent those spies out, and you have to ask yourself, what would have been the counterfactual situation? What would have happened if this or that hadn't happened? If they hadn't sent those spies out, well, they would have presumably just gone marching into the kingdom. Well, God did actually make a concession to their weakness. Numbers 13 does say that, you know, they said they wanted the spies to go, and God says, okay, then send them. And yet, Moses, I think, take some guilt for this when he says, verse 23, the thing pleased me well, and I took 12 men of you, one man for every tribe. I think he's realizing that, nah, I shouldn't really have agreed to it. I should have told you, what, you know, why do you need men to go ahead? God's angel eyes have gone ahead of us, and they are to us instead of eyes. We don't need any human eyes. God has gone ahead. What do you want to know about the land? Is it good or bad? I'm telling you, God said it's good. Come on, enough of this. We're going in. And then verse 31. In the wilderness, he says, where you have seen how Yahweh your God carried you as a man carries his son in all the way that you went until you came to this place. When you contrast that with Numbers 11, verse 11, where he in frustration asks God to slay him because he says, I cannot bear the burden of this people alone. I cannot carry them. You have asked me to carry them and I can't. It's too much for me. Now he realizes at the end, you, Yahweh, our God, you carried Israel as a man carries his own son on his shoulders, piggyback style, or maybe holding him as a baby in his arms. You carried them. You bore their burden. And yet I wrongly thought that it was all up to me to do it. I didn't trust you. I didn't see that you were the one doing it. I thought it all depended upon me, and that's why I was suicidal at one point. In fact, this is quoted a bit in the New Testament from the Septuagint, where it says that God was like a nursing father, as if it was a difficult infant child. But of course, God was not going to drop the infant child. And so there it is. He's saying, yeah, well, that's what God did. He carried us. As a man carries a nursing child, a little baby. But I thought that the burden, as he said in Numbers 11, was all upon me, and of course it was too much for me. I think this recognition of sinfulness and recognition of our own failure is indeed part of spiritual maturity. If you look at the life of Paul, you see this as you go through his letters chronologically. You can see the development of his sense of sinfulness, and yet also his sense of absolute certainty that he is going to be saved. He starts off to the Corinthians saying, well, I am the least of the apostles. Then to the Ephesians, he says that I am the least of all the saints. I'm the least of all the believers. Then finally, in his swan song, 2 Timothy 4, he talks about how sure he is of being in the kingdom. But he also says in 2 Timothy that I am chief of sinners. And God showed me a special mercy. So you see how he starts. The Corinthians, I'm the least of the apostles. Then a bit later to the Ephesians, I'm the least of all the saints. I'm the least of the believers. 2 Timothy, I am chief of sinners. And yet in 2 Timothy at the very end, he's totally confident that he's going to be saved. So then these are the two tracks, as it were, to our maturity, I think. Realizing your own sinfulness rather than renegotiating the narratives in your own mind and justifying yourself and saying, yeah, well, I only did that because he did that or she did that and they did that and rah, rah, yeah, I wasn't a bad bloke, but yeah, okay, there's a few mess-ups, but look, I was only human. No, you see, he's not like that. Paul's not like that. Moses isn't like that. And yet, Paul particularly is absolutely confident that he shall be in God's kingdom. And I think really the way Deuteronomy ends Moses at the very end, I think you can see that he is absolutely confident of God's grace to him personally, although he was not going to enter Canaan. He clearly did have an understanding of the resurrection of the body in the last day. So you can see there how we have a path before us. Increasing conviction of sin. Don't keep, as I say, playing the tape in your own mind that you didn't really do too much wrong. You're a good bloke. It was the rest of them. That's what a lot of older people do. No, that's not spiritual maturity. And also, likewise, don't get to the point where everything's a shade of grey. Will I be saved? Who knows? Hope for the best. Who knows? There's the big beyond. Bit unknown, whatever. When you die, I suppose I'm getting closer to it. We're all getting closer to it. And yet, not necessarily a solid, confident faith that I will be there by his grace. As you see in Paul's path, and I believe in the path of Moses, yes, that increasing awareness of every nuance of your own failure, and yet a greater and greater sense of God's grace. And in fact, the idea of God's grace, of God's mercy, of God as Father, you see it growing in Deuteronomy in a way that you don't see it in the earlier recorded words of Moses. So this is our path, and I do believe that we are, I believe, on that path there to that maturity.